Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
If you're like me and suffer from insomnia, you know what? That's not fun. You know, I tried everything. I couldn't get a good night's sleep. And this is neither drug nor alcohol induced. That's right. It is MyPillow. Mike Lindell invented it, and he fitted me for my first MyPillow, and it's changed my life. I fall asleep faster, stay asleep longer, and the good news, you can too. Just go to MyPillow.com, promo code Sean, and take advantage of one of Mike Lindell's best offers, his special four-pack. You get 50% off two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows. Now, MyPillow is made in the USA, has a 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee, no risk to you, and a 10-year warranty. You don't want to spend more sleepless nights on a pillow tossing and turning that's not working for you. Just go to MyPillow.com right now. Use the promo code Sean, and you get Mike Lindell's special four-pack. You get two MyPillow premium pillows, two go-anywhere pillows, 50% off, and you'll start getting the kind of peaceful and restful and comfortable and deep healing and recuperative sleep you've been craving and deserve. MyPillow.com, promo code Sean. All right, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. I just got finished a little while ago listening to Don Imus sign off the air after all these years in radio, and I was on vacation when it happened, and I got a 50 years in radio. I'm getting up there. I'm 30. I guess I got 20 more to go. I don't know if I'm going to make another 20 years because Linda's going to give me a heart attack between now and then, and I'm literally just going to fall down on my face, croak on the air. Well, if you're going to go down, if you're a golfer, where would you want to die? On the golf course, right? But you want it after you hit the 40-foot putt on 18. Then you could drop dead. You know, or get your final birdie heading into, you know, the heavens if you're worthy. What was with the Pope saying that he didn't believe in hell? That was so odd, that whole story. I have so many, I won't even go down the road. Anyway, so I'm listening to Imus signing off the air after 50 years on radio. And he was saying something that was so powerful that obviously I only wanted to be a radio talk show host when I got into this. Never wanted to be a DJ. And I listened to everybody growing up. I was obsessed with radio. And I'm listening to him sign off. And it was so hard, A, for him to do it. And for him to leave, you could just tell. And it's and then he talked about how you did this. We did this. Well, you did this. You audience, you did this when he got the money for his ranch and so on and so forth. And it was pretty powerful. And it made me realize just how blessed and lucky that I am to come on these airwaves every day and get to see you on Fox News every night, and that we get to share news and information and ideas. And you can't take that for granted. You do give us this microphone. Anybody that is behind a microphone in radio or in front of a camera on TV, you decide if we stay or go. Because if you don't watch, if you don't listen, we're gone. And then you have these forces now that are literally getting paid big money to monitor every second of every conservative on the air because they want to silence conservative voices. I made the statement the other day that I was jealous of Howard Stern because over Christmas in particular, I was listening to some of the best of Stern throughout the year and some of his best interviews, and I'm like, wow, he can say anything he wants, and he gets away with it. He's the only one. And maybe it's because he's not political. I don't know. And I don't want anyone to start monitoring the guy, but we really have gotten so, you know, Alan Dershowitz was saying last night, we criminalize political differences. Now we're criminalizing speech and all these attacks to get all conservatives off the air. You know, everybody forgets one thing. And Laura Ingraham went through this recently. You don't have to like what you're listening to. Nobody's forcing you to listen. And you can turn the dial, which, by the way, is like the dumbest thing I would ever say. But you can't force people to listen 3 hours a day, every day, which is all I ask, and watch 1 hour a night, which is all I ask. You know, the way you get an audience is to deliver a good show. Larry King recently took a shot at me. Yeah, Larry King, who acted like my buddy the last time I had him on. Larry King is bitter. And it's like, you listen to these talk shows today. They're not talk shows. I used to ask the questions that everybody, they're not learning anything. They're telling you and they're preaching. And I'm sitting there, this coming from a guy that bragged about the fact that he never read the books of the authors that he was interviewing. And so he's, so tell me about the book. So tell me about this. When you met him, what? And he thinks that, well, there's another way, Larry, and the other way is I'm studying hours and hours a day and pulling information together every single day and making a ton of phone calls to get information every day so I could actually pass on the information to the audience. And I'm learning every day, but I'm trying to make it a service and easier for people to understand things that they're too busy to study themselves. And I guess you just wanted to entertain yourself for the full hour. All right, let's go to Boise, Idaho, next on the Larry King Show. Tom, you're next, Larry King Show. It's not exactly hard work going call to call to call like you used to in late night radio. I have nothing against Larry King, but if he's going to criticize us and what we do, I think we deserve. Look, he's, how do I say this? His style is boring. It's dull. And there was nothing compelling about it. Except that the only, he was just relying on a great guest to carry him for the hour. I'm trying to put out this information for an audience that's too busy working hard, raising their families, you know, guzzling coffee in the morning, packing lunch boxes, driving their kids to school, putting in 12, 14 hours, racing home to say goodnight to the kids because of all the money that it costs to raise kids in this day and age. And, you know, most people just trying to keep their head above water and not gulp water. And they want a decent house in a nice neighborhood with a decent car. And they want to be able to take their kids to Disney at least once when they're kids, maybe twice, and maybe go on a family vacation once a year. And that kind of is hard for most people to get to. There are more people living paycheck to paycheck. You know, times are tough. You know, that's why this election matters. That's why the superfluous and insignificant crap that they're throwing at this president every day is just so over the top. We forget what they're doing in the meantime is they're not allowing him to do his job that he was elected to do. He's doing it anyway. But the reality is for them to be successful in their hatred of him, that means the country has to do bad. Well, we just had 8 years of bad. We don't need another 4 years of bad or another 8 years of bad. We want to make things better for people. And these people in the news media, I mean, you know, I don't know what show it was on today. Maybe it was Megyn Kelly's daytime show. But I guess the attorney for Stormy is back on. I'm like, you don't think you've had your 15 minutes at this point? And he's actually saying on the show, well, she can perfectly describe his private parts. And I'm like, where's Anderson when you need him? Where's Anderson Cooper when you need him? Because that was like the only question he didn't. He pretty much got to that point. And this is not news. These were if you believe them. And I don't even care, to be honest with you, what happened 12 years ago. And I don't think most Americans care. You know what they care about? They care about getting a nice house in a safe neighborhood with a nice car, sending their kids to decent schools and climbing the ladder and making sure that the country and the opportunities for their kids are better than what they had. I mean, listen to these questions of Anderson. I mean, it's probably the only question he didn't ask. It's ridiculous.
He told Donald Trump to turn around and take off his pants.
Yes.
And did he?
Yes. So he turned around and pulled his pants down a little. You know, he had underwear on and stuff, and I just gave him a couple swats.
This was done in a joking manner?
Yes.
Did you two go out for dinner that night?
No.
You had dinner in the room?
Yes.
Yes. No.
What happened next?
Yes.
And you had sex with him?
Yes.
Yes. No.
You were 27. He was 60. Were you physically attracted to him?
No.
Not at all?
No.
Did you want to have sex with him?
No. But I didn't say no. I'm not a victim. I'm not.
It was entirely consensual.
Oh, yes.
In an industry where condom use is an issue, did he use a condom?
No.
Did you ask him to?
No.
After
all
you
right,
had sex,
so
what
the
happened?
The one remaining question now, and I can go on and on, and I haven't even played the Playboy woman, whatever, Karen McDougal. And that was the one question that Anderson left out. It's creepy. Do you not get it's creepy to me that they're asking those questions. And they're the same people that ignored Juanita Broderick, who got raped, and Kathleen Willey, who was groped and grabbed and fondled and touched and kissed against her will. And they ignored Paula Jones when he exposed herself, meaning Bill Clinton, to her. And this is what they that constitutes news today. Well, there we still can go back to the last question, the one that Anderson missed. Like, it's creepy. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I don't think so. You have Rasmussen now, the president, at 51%. Now, not only is the president not a target, which we're going to get into in some detail today, of Robert Mueller's fishing expedition, but for the first time in almost a year, the majority of people now think Donald Trump is doing a good job as president. Now, and it's a better position that he's in than Barack Obama was in at the same time in his presidency, which was April 4th, 2010, his second year in office. His approval rating was 46%. So for all those people that only 48% disapprove, look, this, I think also something is happening. I think the American people are getting used to the fact that Donald Trump is not going to be your typical president. He's not going to do it their way. He's not going to capitulate into, you know, he was elected to be a disruptor. And he needs to continue disrupting, frankly. We could just get Robert Mueller and his merry band of corrupt lawyers away from this president. Andrew Weissman, can you imagine twice being withholding exculpatory evidence and you're picked by Robert Mueller? Can you imagine losing in the Supreme Court 9-0? Can you imagine being solely responsible because of his blind ambition as a prosecutor for tens of thousands of people at Anderson Accounting losing their jobs? Then he put four Merrill executives in jail for a year. And oops, never mind. That was overturned on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. What is wrong with Robert Mueller that he hired these guys? I've never seen a more abusively biased team of attorneys ever assembled in my entire life. And you know what's not going to be reported today? On fake news CNN, they're not going to report the ADP's March job growth exceeding expectations. Another additional 241,000 positions that were created in the month of March. They'd only been expecting about 205,000. Then we have upward revisions with the government labor bureau statistics. You got, you know, even CNN has had to admit that the president's making progress with key demographic groups. What they found is the latest polling data, you know, despite everything, you know, about Robert Mueller and Stormy and Karen McDougal and all their big exclusives, CNN's polling data shows that Trump is making significant progress with a lot of demographic groups that usually vote Democrat. Young voters in February, just 1 in 5, 18 to 34. Well, now that number is up to 30%. So 20% to 30% is a big jump. Middle-aged voters, he's up 9 points in a month. College graduates, a group that has been somewhat resistant, he's had another 10-point upward swing. Men, Trump was at 50% in March compared to 42% in February. You know, so in spite of all of what they've been trying to do to hurt, delegitimize, and undo an election, it's not working. Now, that's all good news. All right. When we get back, the destroyed Trump media is devastated that Mueller is not mentioned. He's not targeting Trump. Jonathan Turley explains the significance of what Mueller is doing and saying here by saying he's not a target. House leaders are still fighting for the DOJ and the attorney general to appoint a second special counsel. And I'll give you all the details. We're going to do a deep dive into the law when we get back in the next half hour. We'll also get your calls in today, 800-941-SEAN. So my majestic lab, Marley, is in heat. And I've never done this in my whole life, but I want Marley to have puppies. Now, you all have seen how cute Marley is. I mean, and
she's the cutest.
I know. So, but here's the problem. And I will donate one of the puppies to your cause, which is a service dog.
Warren.
Yeah, I thought you meant to me.
Do you want one for yourself?
Yes.
So you absolutely want two. You're taking two of the litter, and I haven't even, and I don't know.
And you haven't even asked me or Linda if we want one, or Jason.
I have to take Marley on a plane to go to Indiana so that Marley can become a mama.
She's going to have a little fun in Indiana. Yeah.
Well, apparently, that's, you know, but I don't know why. I just have this desire to do this because I've never done it in my life. I felt like as a kid growing up, I always, always, always wanted a dog. And my parents said no, no, and hell no. And so the first thing I did when I could is I got Snowball. And then Snowball passed away. And then I had Duffy, and Duffy passed away. Now, then I got Gracie, and Gracie is a Bernice. And then I got Marley. And unlike, you know, my one little dog, let's say Gracie is a little high strung. Snowball used to bite everybody. Oh, it's terrible. I should have been sued 100 times, no matter what I did. I mean, that dog, I mean, and I wasn't going to put the, but she was a little dog. She wasn't, she looked like a little miniature sheepdog, about 30 pounds. And Snowball, I made the mistake once myself of actually giving her a T-bone steak with a lot of meat on it. And then she started eating the bone. And I'm like, all right, that can't be good for the dog. It was my first dog. And I started to take the bone away. And she literally tried to rip my hand off. Oh, she got me good. Oh, so there were one or two people. Well, let's just say when I came to New York, I hired this dog walker person, and that person got bit, and another person got bit. And finally, we had to cordon Snowball off from the rest of the world. So I think we're going to send Marley to find, I guess we're going to have a prearranged marriage is what it is. Let's be honest. And that hopefully will take place this weekend. That's what my plans are. All right, quick break. We'll come back. I'm going to tell you why. Oh, Devin Nunes just sent a memo to Rod Rosenstein. I'll explain next. All right, so why was this shooter in this case out in California yesterday? Apparently, family members again warned police that they thought that this woman was shooting up YouTube was going to attack the company headquarters. They knew it and told the police early Tuesday morning, but it didn't prevent the shooting later that day. We've got to get a hold of, you know, if we really are asking people, see something, say something. If you say something, you got to take it seriously. But look, I do know that a lot of people make a lot of calls to a lot of law enforcement that are phony. You can send them on wild goose chases, too, and that's always a risk, but
Sean, these are the family members.
I know. That's why it's kind of
in both the Parkland case and this case.
Have we ever gotten a reason? Apparently she hated YouTube because they took down, I guess, some of her.
She had some videos up, and she had like a sit-up video, and they said that they were insinuating that it was sexual or something, and they blocked it. They put age restrictions on it. She wasn't able to monetize
properly.
That's
what they do to conservatives now on Twitter and elsewhere, although they deny it. I have too many people telling me it's true. And I just...
Dan Bongino.
They blocked Dan Bongino?
Dan Bongino is all over social talking about this right now.
And they're blocking him?
Yep.
Why are they blocking him?
Who knows? If you want to help Dan Bongino, check him out.
Yeah. I have a letter. It just came out. We'll have more on this later in the program and tonight, where it was addressed to to Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, and Christopher Wray, the FBI Director, and it's sent by House Intel Committee Chairman Devin Nunes, and Devin goes through a list of requests that they have made going back to August of 2017, documents and information that still has not been forthcoming, and he lists all of it, and it's just pathetic to me that this is the same Rod Rosenstein that didn't want the information that became the Nunes memo to come out. And even though that was subpoenaed, he waited till the last minute of that day to finally turn it over. You know, and what he points out is the DOJ, and I know that the attorney general addressed this last week, but it's still not handing over these documents. They're restricting Congress's. And remember, Congress has a role. We have separation of powers, co-equal branches of government. They have a job that's called oversight. And anyway, so for months now, the DOJ has been restricting members of Congress access to other documents as it relates to the August 24th, 2017 subpoenas that they'd sent out and then follow-up letters in November 2nd of 2017. Why is Rod Rosenstein so resistant for the American people to get the truth in all of these issues involving, oh, let's see, the fix-in for Hillary Clinton, the email server scandal issue itself. Of course, then we've got the dossier issue, then the FISA abuse issue. Why is Rod Rosenstein not handing all of this over immediately, especially to members of Congress? Because Congress has a right to see. And it seems that Rod Rosenstein, who should have been conflicted out anyway, because he also reauthorized the FISA warrant that was based on the phony dossier that Clinton bought and paid for, and he appointed Robert Mueller. Well, that's called a conflict of interest. And then Mueller appoints the merry band of the most corrupt lawyers like Andrew Weissman to go after the president. And let me tell you, these people are, they are out for blood. They're not out for 30-day sentences for lying to the FBI, which they got yesterday. That's not what they're out for. Anyway, so the letter from Nunes ends by saying, therefore, in accordance with the August 24, 2017 subpoenas, you are hereby directed to produce to the committee by Wednesday, April 11, 2018, an unredacted version of the EC along with any and all responsive documents that previously made available for in-camera review, including but not limited to Carter Page's FISA applications. There are four of them. Is the original application. The bulk of information was based on the phony Clinton dossier. Anyway, be advised, failure to comply in a satisfactory manner is going to result in the committee pursuing all appropriate legal remedies, including seeking civil enforcement of the August 24th, 2017 subpoenas in federal district court. We might as well just go straight to court, because Rosenstein has no desire to do anything but clearly protect his friends that are corrupt inside the DOJ and the FBI, not rank and file. I say it all the time. You know, it's very interesting. There's a couple of ways you can look at this. And as I explained Jonathan Turley's interpretation, the significance of Mueller saying that Trump isn't a target, I want you to remember, if he did say that Trump was a target, in other words, that they're looking at going after him criminally, you know, you can't subpoena a target, because then they would have the right to remain silent. So there's a part of me that thinks that there's something really fishy going on with Robert Mueller. I just don't trust him based on his actions, based on his background, based on Weissman's background, his pit bull, and based on the way that they've handled things so far. I have no faith and trust in any of them. Anyway, so writing in The Hill, Jonathan Turley, and the media is desperately trying to pretend that Mueller's decision not to designate Trump as, quote, a target, in other words, in a criminal investigation, you know, is they're trying to spin it that that's bad news for the White House. Well, Turley is saying, after a year of media assurances that bombshell developments and smoking gun evidence was, you know, sealing the criminal case against Trump. By the way, did they not know you can't indict a sitting president? You know, did anyone watch Alan Dershowitz dissect that there is no crime of collusion? There's no such thing. And what Greg Jarrett disclosed last night, that it was a week after Paul Manafort's, the raid of his home, that then Rod Rosenstein issued the authority for Mueller to do it. You can't do it after the fact. In other words, that was a CYA, because they probably realized that that exceeded the original mandate. And if I'm Paul Manafort's attorney today, I'm doing backflips and I'm giddy with excitement. Anyway, so they want to say that somehow Mueller saying the president's not a target, they're actually trying to spin it in your corrupt, destroy Trump media as bad news for the White House. And what Turley is saying, after a year of media assurances that bombshell developments, smoking gun evidence was sealing the criminal case against Trump, it's not going to be a criminal case. He's not going to be charged. But what could happen is they're going to write a report. And the way Mueller writes the report, or multiple reports, there were some thoughts and reports out today that he wants to write multiple reports. What he's going to do is he's going to send it over to the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. By the way, I'll bet you any amount of money that's something Rod Rosenstein's going to want to get out in the public in 20 seconds, because he has an agenda. By the way, Donald Trump is signing a proclamation sending the National Guard to the border immediately. Great news. Good job, Mr. President. Finally. And by the way, there's precedence for this. Obama did it. Clinton did it. Bush did it. Anyway, back to Jonathan Turley. And it goes on to say Mueller's decision is too great for many to accept the obvious meaning of the disclosure. And he writes that Mueller apparently does not believe that his prosecution team or the grand jury has substantial evidence linking Trump to the commission of a crime and who, in the judgment of the prosecutor, is a defendant. Now, that would have been less notable when Mueller was appointed in 2017 than it is now, after more than a year of dozens of criminal counts, hundreds of thousands of documents, and a bevy of cooperating witnesses in this case. And then Turley goes on to say the case of criminality or criminal conduct by Trump has not materially improved over the last year. He's right. Last October, Mueller brought the first indictments against former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort and his deputy Rich Gates. And notably, none of the indictments at all were linked to the campaign, let alone Trump. When the obvious point was raised, we were told it meant nothing, and Mueller was likely holding back the really damaging indictments while pressuring Trump aides. And people, commentators, continue to announce that bombshell disclosures against Trump on a daily basis, with experts alleging clear cases for treason to obstruction of justice to witness tampering and other crimes. There's never been any evidence of any of this by anybody. And in February, Mueller handed down the indictments of 13 Russian nationals and three Russian organizations for election-related crimes, from hacking to identity fraud. Not only did those charges not implicate Trump or his campaign, but the filing expressly stated no one in the Trump campaign knowingly engaged Russians in these efforts. I mean, the media has the same information I do, but they just choose not to report it to you. Now, Mueller reportedly has said that he doesn't consider Trump a target of criminal investigation. And what Turley says is, looking at each of the prior filings, Mueller's disclosure would seem consistent with a lack of compelling evidence of any crime committed by Trump or the Trump campaign. Indeed, it would indicate Trump's status has not changed from when Comey told Congress that Trump was not a target well before Comey was fired. And by the way, that firing, the president can fire anybody he wants for any reason, which is perfectly legal and legitimate, and you can't make the case for obstruction. You know, but the Destroy Trump media is devastated that Mueller isn't targeting Trump, at least not at this time. You know, the fake news Democratic media, that was the whole point, wasn't it? That they were going to produce evidence of Trump and make him a target in all of this, of collusion, even though collusion itself is not a crime. They don't care about collusion with Russia. You look at all the evidence that we now have that Hillary colluded with Russian sources, that she paid for Russian and Russian government lies, that those Russian lies were put in a dossier she paid for. That phony, unverified, and now proven false dossier is then used to get a FISA warrant in the weeks leading up to the election against a Trump campaign associate. No Democrats seem bothered by Hillary Clinton. Oh, no, it's not obstruction when you delete 33,000 subpoenaed emails, acid wash the hard drive, and beat the crap out of your BlackBerry and other devices. No, that's not obstruction. And by the way, 18 USC 793, you can't mishandle or destroy classified information, which she did. She committed felonies. And then Comey struck Paige McCabe and Loretta Lynch, all seemingly were involved in fixing this for her so she could remain in the race as a Democratic candidate. Nobody cares about that. Really? Sean Hannity's going to go to a court and lie before a judge and not give important information to a judge to spy on an American citizen? Give me a break. We'd all be in jail. Anyway, so the Washington Post, Mueller told Trump he's not a criminal target, but that doesn't mean his evidence against Trump is weak. Well, they're just dying for this to happen. And in the meantime, the country could go straight to hell and nobody cares about a duly elected president being able to function and do his job, for crying out loud. Because these people in the media, they don't care one bit that Obama brutalized the economy for 8 years. Yet 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, lowest labor participation rate since the 70s, lowest home ownership rate in 51 years, worst recovery from since the 40s, and he doubled the national debt. Once said $9 trillion in debt is irresponsible and unpatriotic. You talk about like whistling past the Russiagate graveyard. They can't stand it. They're not going to be happy unless they impeach this man. And that's why this is now, this is going to be the most important thing that you think about when you decide whether you're A, going to vote in the next election, and B, if you don't see the importance of making sure that the House and Senate remain Republican, they will impeach him. And it's not if, they will. By the way, one good news. Remember, we've been upset about the omnibus. Well, the president said he'll never sign a bill like this again. Well, anyway, there's a 1974 act called the Impoundment Act that allows the president to order the, literally, take back the applied specific funds so long as Congress approves those cuts within 45 days. Under the Impoundment Act, a simple majority is enough to approve the presidential, you know, pullback of the money. Well, that's awesome. Let's see if Republicans are really against big government spending. Anyway, House leaders, by the way, are now pressing for a second special counsel, including Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise, the two guys that now have their eyes on the speakership, with all the rumors that, what's his name, Paul Ryan is going to go. You know, the leak that Trump is not a criminal target. I am just telling you that there's a lot of bad people involved in all of this. And the one thing is, you notice McCabe did get fired. All these other people have been demoted. You notice there's not one thing that we have told you where we don't have evidence for it. They don't cover those. They don't cover the biggest abuse of power scandal in American history. Oh, so Nancy Pelosi says Democrats will repeal the GOP tax cuts and tax law when we retake the House. That's awesome. Now, the Wall Street Journal, this is amazing. The White House now is working on a plan to scale back that massive omnibus spending bill. And in a nutshell, the idea is to repeal this year's spending splurge that now bears the signature of Donald Trump, which he didn't want to sign. And the way they would actually do this is by using the 1974 Impoundment Act. Congress has 45 days to do it. We need to now put pressure on Congress to pull back the excessive spending, and you only need a simple majority. Anyway, Kevin McCarthy confirmed that the office is working with the Trump administration on that reproach. By the way, while they're at it, how about allocating money for the border wall, the complete border wall? Just some ideas from a little old Hannity.
I spelled out in my opening statement, my prepared statement, the first time I recall hearing about the hack into the DNC, and I recalled that it had been some months before I was learning of this, that the FBI and the DNC had been in contact with each other about this, and I was not very happy to be learning about it several months later, very clearly.
Well, there's two things, I guess, going on. The DNC hack was at some point in time. What was the delay between the hacks that FBI was aware of, or who found the hacks to the scanning, as you call it, of the various voter registration systems, the attempted intrusions, perhaps, into the voter records? Who discovered that? And if it was the FBI, then how long was there a delay between that and your, because using your analogy of the cop and the fireman, that the flames are going up, we need the fireman there first. And so what was that delay between the infrastructure that we're concerned
about? My recollection, and part of this is from open source reporting I've read more recently, is that the FBI first discovered the intrusion. That's my recollection.
Intrusion of the state systems.
Into the DNC.
Okay.
And I recall very clearly that there was a delay between that initial contact with the DNC and when the report got to me as Secretary of DHS. It may have been that there were others at the staff level in DHS who were privy to this before it filtered up to me in an intelligence report, but that's my recollection.
Let me just be very clear. At no point during my tenure at the DNC was I contacted by the FBI, DHS, or any government agency, or alerted or made aware that they believed that the Russians, an enemy state, was intruding on our network. At no point. And I am a member of Congress who had the ability to sit down and be briefed in a classified setting. Even Director Comey testified publicly that he wished that he had gone to the top of the organization. We're one of the two national political parties. It is astounding that when they had a member of Congress who was leading that organization, that no one felt it was any more important when we had a foreign enemy intruding on one of the two political parties' networks to do anything more than lob a phone call in to our tech support through our main switchboard.
But how can both
That's
be
outrageous.
True? I mean, Secretary Johnson says the DNC rebuffed the help that they offered. You're saying that no one ever contacted
respectfully,
you.
Respectfully, Secretary Johnson is utterly misinformed. That is simply not accurate. And much that has been written about the timeline of events by the New York Times, the Washington Post, that document through multiple sources, including me, that the FBI and other federal agencies did virtually nothing to make sure that when they were aware, at the point that they were aware that there was, or concerned that there was an intrusion on our network by the Russians, that they did virtually nothing to sound the alarm bells to make us aware of that. And they left, essentially, the Russians on our network for almost a year.
I'll have to take a closer look at what Orange County is saying and possibly doing. State law is state law, and it's my job to enforce state law. I will do so, and we want to make sure that every jurisdiction, including Orange County, understand what state law requires of the people and the subdivisions of the state of California.
All right, glad you're with us. Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number as we hit hour two here. That was Jay Johnson and Xavier Becerra, who's now the attorney general out in California. And it was also Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Nobody in the media is following this whole story about how this Pakistani IT, Imran Awan, actually had access to everything that Congress had, never had a background check, was double billing, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz kept this guy on the payroll. Our friend Luke Rosiak over at the Daily Caller has been monitoring this. He has a new article out today. 44 Democrats, including Wasserman Schultz, exempted the Pakistani IT aides from background checks. Now, we have issues involving the top level of national security here, and nobody in the media seems to care about it except our friend Luke Rosiak. Luke, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Explain, how is it possible you have 44 Democrats that hired Imran Awan and a Pakistani-born IT aide, and then he hires his family, and they get caught double billing, and then we find out members of his family, let's see, one works in a car dealership, another one works at McDonald's. I don't think if you have IT experience, you're going to be working in either one of those places. And meanwhile, all 44 Democrats who hired this guy and his family chose to exempt them from background checks, even though he's from Pakistan. Why?
Right. And the House policy says that members of Congress shall conduct background checks on people with super user privileges, meaning IT guys that can read everyone's email. It says you have to do background checks. The policy is really actually kind of weak because if you read the fine print, there's technically a loophole where it says you really should be doing a background check with the Capitol Police, but if someone else has already done one, you can have them vouch for you. So what the Democrats did is they all said that someone else vouched for them. But when the Inspector General came in and found what these guys were up to, which you mentioned double billing, that's true, but it was much worse than that. The Inspector General found that they were taking data off the House network and they were logging into servers that they had no business accessing. I mean, that's the real scary stuff here. And
by the way, would it be included in the emails that they have access to? Would that include top secret classified information in some cases?
Not necessarily, because they did work for three members of the Intelligence Committee, and that's really concerning. But luckily, they should have that stuff firewalled off into a SCIF. But, I mean, the DNC emails, there's certainly nothing classified there, and that's a good example of how you can blackmail members of Congress with this. Clearly, if you can read all the emails of members of Congress, that's really sensitive stuff. And so these guys, even though the policy was background checks, every single one of the 44 exempted them because the IG said they'd never been vetted. They had no background check. And if they would have done that check, they would have seen that they had $1 million bankruptcy, which is a huge, you don't give someone access to your data, you don't get a security clearance if you just have $1 million in debt, because what are you going to do when you got huge money problems and you've got this data that's really valuable? You have pressure to monetize it. So no one gives data to people with money problems, but they did that. These guys had multiple criminal convictions each. They had a dozen lawsuits. A lot of these lawsuits are about fraud, and one of those lawsuits says that they took money from an Iraqi government official who's a fugitive. So these are all in public records. These are things that they would have found if anyone had checked, but they didn't check. So,
tell me about your conversation with the Attorney General now of California, former member of Congress, Xavier Becerra.
So the IG report says that they were basically, it looks like they're funneling data from all these members of members' servers and putting it all on one computer. And basically the epicenter of this hack was the House Democratic Caucus server. So if that sounds like the DNC, it's because it should. The House Democratic Caucus is kind of like the DNC's sister group within the House. And it was run by Xavier Becerra. He was the chairman of it. So he is the key figure here, other than Wasserman Schultz, because he was the guy whose server was hacked. Just like Wasserman Schultz was chairman of the DNC, he was chairman of the Democratic Caucus when he was hacked. And he never said a word. And he actually knew about problems, and he fired the Awans. And the IG report says that after Becerra fired the Awans, they kept logging in anyway, and he still didn't go to police. So Xavier Becerra never said a word about this. And they find out about the hack, and they leave these guys on the network. So we heard the audio of Wasserman Schultz talking about how she's so mad that the Russians were supposedly left on the network. They did the exact same thing. They knowingly allowed these Pakistani guys to stay on the network for months after the inspector general told them that they were making unauthorized access. So the worst thing that happened at all, and this is the smoking gun to me, and a lot of people miss this, is after the IG report was issued and the Awans figured out that they were in trouble, the House Democratic Caucus's server was stolen. Xavier Becerra's server was physically stolen. And that was the key piece of evidence at that time that the cops and FBI would have used to prosecute these guys for hacking. So it's evidence tampering.
Was it stolen or was it purposefully taken by somebody that could have been implicated by it?
That's a good question. I mean, the best way that I can put it is that it...
By the way, you know what this sounds like to me, Luke? It sounds like, let's see, deleting subpoenaed emails, acid washing and bleach bitting your hard drive, and smashing up your devices. That's what I... But, you know, what do I know? I'm just the suspicious old talk show host.
No, I think you're exactly right, because if Xavier Becerra truly was just an innocent victim here, he should be the first one out there saying, my God, my server was stolen during the election. This is insane. And he should be the one clamoring for justice. He's never said a word. I did catch up with him at a press
conference. By the way, maybe the Russians did it, Luke.
And keep in mind, this guy who didn't tell the cops when his server was stolen, he's the Attorney General of California.
But here's what I want to understand. I would assume that there's backups to all of this, is there not?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that they do have the data that was on his server, and that's how they, one of the ways they know that it was stolen was that they compared what the server was after the election to what they had detected when they were using it to take all this information onto it. And that's how they realized that this evidence tampering was going on. So that's the good news here, is that they caught them in this act. The bad news is that we never saw any prosecution, and the Democrats covered it up. And that really makes you think, I mean, it's pretty hard to take their constant complaints about the DNC seriously here, because people don't understand. The DNC is a fundraising group. That's all it is. Who cares? It raises money. We're talking about the offices of the U.S. government here. And if these Democrats don't care if their U.S. government offices are hacked, why should we care about this fundraising group?
Well, I mean, all of this now, when you put together the fact that Imran Aran himself actually took Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop and put it in that phone booth area within the Capitol with a note attached to it. I just want to know, do we know the status of who's cooperating, who's not cooperating? Do we know the status of the investigation? Short of the sad part is what you're describing is a national security crisis. And unfortunately, our corrupt media only cares about Stormy Daniels. Or a phony Russian conspiracy that they've been peddling for 15 months. So, you know, here we have a real national security issue. Here we have, you know, a reckless handling of classified information and not doing background checks. And besides you, I don't know anyone else that's following this.
Yeah, I think this is a national security crisis, and they've got traffic cops on the scene. So there is some law enforcement activity going on, but they're not treating it seriously. And if they wind up saying, oh, there's nothing there, it's because you didn't dedicate the resources that you needed to look. And I do think what they're trying to do here is pit everyone against each other and have them turn. But I think that there's some kind of bizarre alliance between the Democrats and the Iwans where neither party wants to implicate the others. And they're hoping that without much pressure, they can, if neither one talks, then they all get away with it. And because the media never talks about this, this is an opportunity for really the cover-up of the decade, because there was a lot of scandals going on in the 2016 election and a lot of cover-ups. But what stands out about this Imran Awan case is this was such a successful cover-up, because you never hear about it. And that's the opportunity for the Democrats to do things that are indefensible. So no one even asks Javier Becerra about this missing server. And that
sounds to me like he needs to be called in, and there needs to be an investigation for national security purposes, and my suspicions now are through the roof about who benefits if you lose the hard drive? You know, like who profits, who benefits? Follow the money, follow the hard drive. Who would benefit from taking that hard drive? Was it Imran Awan, or was it likely Becerra? I have my own suspicions. Or was it somebody else that just happened to want a hard drive and just happened to take his, and then he happened to not tell the FBI or the police? As a top-ranking congressman that had classified information on it, that this was taken away. All right, we'll continue on the other side. Luke Roziak is with us. All right, as we continue, Luke Roziak is with us from the Daily Caller. He's an investigative reporter. 44 Democrats, including Debbie Wasserman Schultz, exempted the Imran Awan family, these IT aides, from the traditional and mandated background checks. Well, pushing background checks for ammunition buyers, which, by the way, is fascinating when you look at that. And by the way, it has nothing to do with anybody being from Pakistan. It doesn't matter what country you come from. That's standard operating procedure, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, the inspector general did find that they used their access to log into the servers of members that they didn't even work for. How deep does this go? Have we ever gotten a full answer on that?
We've never gotten the full answer. My understanding is that the members are refusing to press charges, and because there's really the Republicans aren't talking about it, the FBI doesn't see any incentive to anger Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the other Democrats. And so it's basically like separation of powers. And I picture in the Middle Ages when you'd have like a thief and he's running into like the Notre Dame Cathedral and crying, sanctuary, sanctuary, separation of church and state, separation of legislative branch, executive branch. They're trying to run a sanctuary Congress in there where they're saying, we're Congress, stay out. And, you know, Jeff Sessions, he's not exactly, doesn't necessarily have enough of a backbone to stand up to them when, you know, Paul Ryan doesn't even appear to have his back.
Yeah, well said.
You never hear Republicans talk about this.
I couldn't believe that Rod Rosenstein didn't get Ryan to go along with him with the information that ended up being the Nunes memo. And I've got to tell you, I've never seen a level of corruption like this in my life. And this just adds to the many, many reasons we need a special counsel. I've got to tell you, you're dogged in this, and you've been amazing, and the information you're passing on is invaluable. I don't think Debbie Wasserman Schultz survives without some type of indictment by the time this is all done. That's my own personal opinion. But we thank you, Luke Roziak. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for the update. All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. When we come back, wide open telephones, 800-941-SHAWN, if you want to be a part of the show. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. We're going to get some of your calls in here in just a second. I read a piece, and I can't believe I want to hit myself. I somehow it got lost. I was reading in the New York Daily News today. It's been 50 years ago today that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. And there was a New York Times reporter, was a young reporter at the time, was there as this was all unfolding. And he told the entire story. And I got to be honest, I'm not a big conspiracy theorist like MSNBC, but he told the story. He did not think that they got this right in terms of who assassinated Dr. King. And Earl Caldwell is the guy's name. The former New York Times, an amazing writer. I mean, I could not put it down, and it was a pretty long piece. And he was talking about, like, these memories live with him to this day, and certain images are etched into his mind. And he told the whole story about that day, and there was like a thicket of bushes he describes, and that's where he saw what he thought was somebody with a gun. And then he never once got interviewed by investigators. I'd never known this. And then on top of that, there was a couple of guys that were drinking in this area of bushes. And one of those guys told the story that he saw a guy assemble a gun. Now, James Earl Ray, who was the one convicted in the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., he was a block away. And so while it was he described a loud bang, he was literally just a few hotel rooms down from where Martin Luther King Jr. was. Ralph Abernathy was there. Anyway, he was the lone reporter on the scene, a young man working for the New York Times. We'll put this article up on my website. I think it's worth reading. And it really bothered me because I realized I had not investigated this to the extent that I should have. And certainly his case is rather compelling. And the fact that they didn't listen to the two guys that were literally in this thicket of bushes that saw somebody else. Anyway, one of the things, I mean, it's an amazing life story. And one of the best speeches you've ever heard is his I Have a Dream speech. And we just want to play a little portion, then we're going to get to your calls.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream.
Yeah.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. Dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My Country, 'Tis of Thee." "Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside. Let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Just one of the greatest, bravest people. One of the great things that happened in my life, and I mentioned this in February on the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, is that when I lived in Atlanta, I got to know a lot of these guys. I got to know that generation, including John Lewis, including, you know, people like Hosea Williams and Tom Houck, who was a driver for Martin Luther King Jr. at the time. He was a huge liberal. He and I used to fight constantly on radio, but he's a great guy. And you know, then you look at, you know, the mayors that followed. Maynard Jackson welcomed me to the city of Atlanta the day that I arrived there. I mean, real, just opened, welcome to Atlanta. And I was like, wow, that was pretty impressive for me. And I got to interview him and just all of these people. And you realize there's an incredible amount of bravery. Take politics out of it. I know that a lot of, you know, Joseph Lowery, Andy Young, they never agreed with my politics, but they'd come on my show and you see what, you know, when they would march and then you've got hoses turned on you and dogs turned on you and mobs that hate you and they'd march. And, you know, in the case, I know John Lewis, Congressman Lewis, I literally had a brick thrown at this man's skull that hit him. An incredible act of bravery that made the world a better place. And it taught a lot that you can do things in a nonviolent manner. Just an incredible. Let's, you know, that's the Martin Luther King Jr. that I got to know. My favorite person was Hosea Williams, though. Oh, my God. He was such a trip. Every Monday before the Thursday Thanksgiving, he'd call me, "Sean, we're not going to make it." And then he'd give out the number. And I'm like, "What do you mean we're not going to make it? He's not going to be able to feed the homeless that year." I said, "Of course we're going to make it." And every year, every Monday before the Thursday Thanksgiving, he'd call the show for the years I was down there. The number was 222-9999. I still remember the number. And Jose, he was just a larger-than-life character. The funny part is he got me one year. He goes, "And Hannity, you're coming down, and you're going to serve the food." I'm like, "Oh, man." I'm like, "All right, I'm going to do it." And I went down, and I served the food to people. Place is packed. There's more food you could feed the whole city of Atlanta by the time Hosea was done, but he never started until the Monday before. And a poor guy was getting in trouble constantly. I have the best stories that I can't tell on the air because I just loved him too much, and he was just such a man full of life. He was a real character. Let's put it this way. He was in his 70s, and he had a girlfriend in his 30s, and he was a minister. And the words, "A man's got to do what a man's got to do," came out over the radio. And I'm like, oh. Hosea, Reverend, you're going to get in trouble again. He goes, "Oh, that's all right. I'm always in trouble." He didn't care. But he was brutally honest and a really fun guy. All right, let's get to our busy phones. All right, Russ in Grand Junction, Colorado. Hey, Russ, how are you?
Hey, Sean. Boy, I wish I had about 3 hours. I'd love to just talk to you
Yeah, what's going on?
Okay. Well, first of all, I remember when I was in New York, I'm totally blind, and my guide dog is from New York. And in 1977, I heard Imus on WNBC for the first time. And
WNBC, yeah, I know.
And I loved it. 66 was NBC, 77 was ABC, and 88 is still CBS, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, I consider this an honor and a privilege to talk to you. I just absolutely really appreciate the fantastic rapport that you have with both President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu. I just really admire you for that.
Listen, this is a moment in history. You know, when you had the Saudi crown prince come to the United States and say the things that he was saying about transforming, you know, the archaic Sharia laws of Saudi Arabia. Listen, I'm a trust but verify guy, but it certainly is good to hear. But then talk about Israel's right to their homeland and this alliance that has emerged because of Iranian hegemony and the fear of it in the region between the Saudis, the Egyptians, the Jordanians, the Emirates, and Israel. This is like a moment in time. It's like we have a chance to thread a needle and bring about a real peace, a lasting peace in the Middle East. And isn't it ironic that the guy that's going to meet with Kim Jong-un about denuclearization and the guy that could bring peace in the Middle East is going to end up being Donald Trump? How phenomenal would that be?
All the things that Martin Luther King said, we wouldn't have the political divide that we have currently.
Yeah. I got to tell you. What else did you want to say? Somebody's telling
me. I really miss being hanitized. Really miss the Irish guy.
There you go. I just hanitized you.
Wow. Now I'm honored completely. And the other thing I wanted to say is I think you should stop picking on Linda as much as you do.
Stop picking on her. I'm picking on. Do you understand who picks on who here?
Now, Linda is an innocent. I truly believe this.
Oh,
hello,
Russ.
Linda. I'm your biggest fan.
Why are you sucking up to Linda? Why?
He's not sucking up. He's treating a lady the way she should be treated.
He's acting like
with Linda.
You want to go to lunch? All right.
Yeah, really?
I'd love to go. Hey, you could have your first and only blind date.
Hey! Oh, now it's a party. All right.
And you do know that you're asking out a married woman. You do know that.
I'm sure my husband would say, please go. I don't have to.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, you don't care about that part. Oh, here we go.
Oh, no. It would be completely honorable. But I think we should have every month one day be nice to Linda Day.
I think you need to stop sucking up to Linda.
Really nice about Linda.
Listen, nobody in the world. Can I just set the record straight here? There is nobody in the world that is as nice to Linda as me.
Oh, yeah, that's what I say every day. That's old
Linda,
Sean Hannity.
I'm going to take the raise that I just gave you back.
Oh, for God's sake, the raise is earned. That's not being nice. That's justified.
Oh, my
God. If she lives in Manhattan, she needs to use every bit of it, too.
See that? Russ understands. That's why I need free lunch.
That's right.
By the way.
And I did have one real quick question, Sean. Do you know if your movie is audio described?
I'm sure it is because I think all movies are. But if not, let me see what I can do. Linda, I'll let you talk to Linda off the air.
Oh, I want to talk to Linda.
All right, and we'll see if we can't get you one, okay?
Well, thank you for being so kind. You are fantastic.
You've been very annoying with sucking up to her.
Oh, don't be sad.
I'm not sad.
One for me, 10 million love you. We'll be fine.
No, we're
fine. Thank you,
Sean. All right, nice. Stay on the line. All right, when we come back, Jeff Lord and Kaylee McEnany are going to join us. News Roundup, Information Overload Hour, and your calls. And you're going to meet one of the most special 8-year-old little boys that you've ever heard in your life. That and more straight ahead. All right, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. Write down our toll-free telephone number. We'll be taking your calls in the last half hour of the program today. It's amazing as you witness and you watch the news media in this country and just how viciously, abusively biased they are. You know, for example, we put together montages about, you know, the media and the cloud that hangs over the Trump administration. and the big cloud, they all say the same thing.
So the cloud hanging over Donald Trump as he becomes president of the United States, especially when it comes to foreign policy, has to do with Russia. Obviously, a lot of unanswered questions.
More now on the cloud that seems to be hanging over the Trump administration.
That cloud hanging over the administration. Continued questions.
This has been the cloud hanging over the Trump administration.
There's more breaking news on the cloud of suspicion hanging over this White House.
The Russia cloud hanging over the Trump administration.
And the Russia cloud doesn't appear to be moving out of Washington.
Now to that other dark cloud hanging over the Trump administration, the Russia investigation.
The Russia probe is the dark cloud on the horizon.
If Bob Mueller...
All right, we can keep going on the cloud comment. Now let's go to the Russia hysteria nonsense. Then they all repeat themselves here.
But first, we want to start with this week in Russiagate.
Donald Trump is afraid. A political hurricane is out there at sea for him. We'll call it Hurricane Vladimir, if you will, the whole Russian thing.
It is as if there are no shoes on the Trump human centipede that are not about Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia.
This cloud about collusion with Russia will hang over him no matter where he stands.
It certainly feels like we're in the opening stages of a devastating political chapter in American history. Evidence is mounting for the president's meddling in the Russia probe.
It's any day to be watching Ari. It is today. Russia, Russia, Russia.
I'll say it again. This Russian connection just keeps building, and every time it builds and expands, you have to wonder.
So now
Trump
it's been 15 months, and we have no evidence of Russia collusion. And if it's not that, it's stormy, stormy, stormy. And if it's not that, it's kofefi, kofefi, kofefi.
That will live in history. Kofefe.
Despite the constant negative press, kofefe.
He wrote the word kofefi.
Kofefe. 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 A little fun with kofefe.
Kofefe.
Kofefe. And now, I was going to say kofefi.
I like kofefe.
The bizarre tweet last night, kofefe. Why is it important? Everyone was talking
about it.
You
know, that was an interesting moment in history, but... Remember when Barack Obama was given a speech and he said repeatedly, Navy corpsman, Navy corpsman, Navy corpsman, corpsman, corpsman. Now, if you say corpsman that many times in a speech, it means you don't know what a corpsman is.
All around the world, Navy corpsman Christian Bashar, and lying on a gurney aboard the USNS Comfort, a woman asked Christopher, "Where do you come from? What country?" And in Creole, corpsman Bashar responded, "In Tanzania, the United States of America."
Corpsman. That wasn't a big deal. You know, so I said that, you know, if Mueller, as arrogant as he is, pushes this to its ultimate limit, it's going to be a civil war in this country. I mean, and I said not a war. I said a civil war in as much as we'll be that divided. And you won't even be able to have dinner with your relatives without throwing mashed potatoes at each other. I'm not the first person to use it's a civil war. Let's go to the left-wing media and remind people.
We are in the midst of a cold civil war in this country, a political and cultural civil war.
He is clearly trying to ignite a civil war in this country.
A civil war is breaking out in the Democratic Party.
It started a civil war in the party.
We have almost a state of civic civil war in this country because of the deep divisions in the country, politically and socially, that have been exacerbated by this past election campaign.
And I think we're going to see an ongoing civil war.
It's Donald Trump that's really causing the civil war. He's attacking his fellow Republicans.
Tonight we're watching a civil war between mostly Southern senators.
If, in fact, the Democrats lose on Tuesday in Virginia, it will lead to close to a civil war.
Currently engulfed in a civil war.
You know we got a civil war with...
Civil War, Covfefe. Anyway, here to break down the media insanity, Kayleigh McEnany, author of The New American Revolution, a bestseller, The Making of a Populist Movement. Jeff Lord is with us, a former associate political director in the Reagan administration, columnist, author of the book What America Needs, The Case for Donald Trump, and formerly best friends with Axelrod and Van Jones over at CNN till they canned you. How are you?
Well, I'm just fine, and I can only tell you what a delight it is to be with my old pal, Kayleigh, because we were alone for a long time.
We were.
Well, I didn't have Kayleigh's text, but I'd be watching you guys sometimes, and I'd be like, oh, man, let me send Jeff Lord a text. And I'm like, Jeff, I don't know how you sit there without, you know, literally standing up and screaming. And But you two took...
It was an exercise in patience.
Oh, yeah. Through patience possess you your soul. You have a pretty deep soul, is my guess at this point. But we get the point. They're not interested in the biggest, or what is, Jeff, the biggest abuse of power scandal in history. They're missing in action that Hillary Clinton rigged a primary. They're missing in action when it comes to the FBI, DOJ rigging an investigation. They're missing in action the real Russia collusion, Hillary paying for Russian lies to manipulate the American people, and then that those lies then used as the foundation of a Pfizer warrant application, and they never tell the Pfizer judges that, in fact, she bought and paid for all these lies and that they never verified what was in the dossier. So, you know, they're missing in action on the most important stories, but don't worry, there's always stormy.
Well, that's right, Sean. And, you know, when you play these montages, I mean, I frankly find them really fascinating because it just shows you the sort of liberal narrative at work, the liberal groupthink. And, you know, the other week when Hillary was in India and she was talking about the people that voted for her, what she's saying, in essence, is that they all live in this bubble and they all think alike and they all go down the same path. And that goes triple for the media. I mean, I don't have to say this to you of all people. The reason for the existence of Fox News or Sinclair or any conservative commentator out there having problems is because we are breaking through the liberal narrative of whatever it is at the moment. You can find, they get these things in their head, and it's like universal. I mean, one of the things I found so fascinating at CNN is they would tell me, people would tell me that Democrats were back in the old days when they were racist and Klans members, that they were all conservatives. Well, it just isn't true. I mean, it's just factually, historically not correct. But they believe it.
Yeah.
And
no,
that's
listen.
The problem here is that the liberal narrative, whatever it is, it could be Stormy Daniels, whatever it is, it's so widespread in their bubble that they just sit there and effortlessly regurgitate it.
I think that's the thing that's most shocking. I mean, there is a groupthink mentality. They laughed at Trump running. They never thought he could win. They were in a state of shock when he won, and they've been all involved in an effort to undermine the president ever since, Kaylee.
Absolutely. I mean, they are coordinating conspiracy theories because they have the common goal of taking down this president. They cannot accept the fact that Donald Trump became president of the United States. This was supposed to be, as CNN described on air with Jeff Lord and I the night before the election, this was supposed to be torch passing from President Obama to President Clinton. And when that did not happen, they could not handle it. So that's when CNN became the Russia network, and every single segment was geared toward a Russia conspiracy theory to take down this president. It's unfair. Their goal is to distract the American people, to demonize the president. And by the way, they collude with the Democratic Party on their talking points. Jeff and I saw it live from the DNC and the RNC when they described Donald Trump's speech as dark. You had the New York Times doing that, the Washington Post, the New Yorker, and so on and so forth. It was all a coordinated effort to stop Donald Trump, but they lost.
Why are they attacking? Well, we know why they hate Fox News. That's pretty basic. But Sinclair is a group of TV stations that have affiliations with NBC, CBS, ABC, and Fox. In other words, their stations run Stephen Colbert and Kimmel and Stephanopoulos, and otherwise they'd lose their affiliations.
Yeah, well, because they think that Sinclair is breaking through the liberal narrative or threatens the liberal narrative. So that, I mean, this recent business of the last 24, 48 hours where Sinclair has been taking criticism from CNN and others because they're putting out word to, you know, to their all of their stations that they need to run certain messages. What is left out of all of this is that CNN itself, not to mention MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, they all have their liberal narrative down pat. They do exactly what they are complaining about. What they don't like is that it's a conservative narrative of events, that it's a different of opinion. I mean, this is why, Sean, they can't stand you. I mean, it just astonishes me. I mean, you know
what the saddest thing?
Show every day, and you're on it, and of course, they cannot stand it.
You know, what's so amazing to me is they've got every outlet they want. I don't see conservatives. Occasionally it happens. I've never supported boycotts my whole life. But if you don't like a particular radio or TV show, and I don't like to remind my audience of this because I don't want people to do it, and we try to produce a show every day that they'd never want to tune out. But at the end of the day, I mean, everybody has the power. You don't have to watch it. You don't have to listen to it. And there are more options available than there have ever been before. And the idea that you want to silence people either through these boycotts or intimidation efforts, you know, to me, Kaylee, it's just all they want is to silence conservative voices. They don't even want them to be heard or giving people the option of hearing them.
Absolutely. It's about censoring. They want to stifle conservatism. And how do you do that? You do that by silencing people like you, people like Laura Ingraham, the strong voices out there that are an unafraid voice for conservatism. It's about censorship. And by the way, we are winning. One of the things I want to point out is the Monmouth poll that just came out that showed last year 63% of the nation believed there was fake news. This year, 77% believe that because people are seeing through CNN and the New York Times and these outlets that go out there with absolute slander, tear apart this president, only to later leak conveniently on a Friday corrections to their previously false story. We're winning. People are seeing them for who they are, which is why the effort to silence has grown
even
stronger.
This is now an industry where millions of dollars are spent by people on the left. So every minute of every day that I'm on the air, I'm being monitored. And it's the same for every other conservative. It's not just me. And they're hoping and praying that I say one word, one phrase, one sentence that they deem politically incorrect. You know who I'm most jealous of in media? Howard Stern. Howard Stern can say and do anything he wants, and nobody bothers this guy. And it, you know what? It's raw, it's unfiltered, and it's refreshing. It's like nobody else can get away with it. And God bless him. I'm not saying this so people can monitor him. I'm just saying it's like he's the only person that I think can say pretty much anything he wants. Yeah.
Well, you're right. And one of the reasons I think Howard gets away with this is that originally when he started, this was seen as so outrageous, and outrageous was seen by a lot of liberals as, you know, being left or being popular and all of that sort of thing. Well, time has moved on here, and boy, you know, these people are super politically correct. I am absolutely amazed that Howard has been able to survive here with all of this. But you're absolutely right.
Listen, he went through periods of this also, which is why I think he made the jump ultimately to satellite, so he'd have more freedom. All right, we'll take a break. More with Kaylee McEnany with us and Jeff Lord with us. We'll get to your calls at the bottom of this half hour. Hannity tonight at 9. We have an amazing show. I don't even want to give it away, but I'm just telling you, we've got more stuff that we're putting in this show tonight that you're going to want to see and maybe record. 9 Eastern, Hannity Fox. All right, as we continue, Kaylee McEnany is with us, author of the bestseller, The New American Revolution, The Making of a Populist Movement. Jeff Lord, former associate political director in the Reagan administration, wrote the book What America Needs, The Case for Trump. You know, I watched both of you on CNN all the time, and I watched you both. It literally was always 10 to 1. I mean, was that by design? Is that what Zucker's model is of so-called fairness?
Yes, and then it changed to 8 to 2 when they gave us Jeff. When we were on the same panel.
Yeah, okay, and then it's Axelrod. You got every other person, including the hosts, that are left-wing. You know, you have creepy Anderson Cooper.
My pal Anderson. I mean, I have to say, he was always great to me. One of the things that I think this
I'm
is
sure he's a nice guy, but the questions. Wait a minute, Jeff.
But
I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Me is I remember vividly Kaylee saying to me one night, "My goodness, they're going to put us on the same panel together." It was so stunning because you had all these liberals there that they never even thought twice about having them all there. But to have two Trump people on the same panel was just amazing.
All right. I don't understand this part of it, though. I mean, you guys have I would watch this show, Kaylee, and all I saw. I'm sure Anderson and all these people are nice, Kaylee. But I mean, those interviews he did were creepy.
Right, right. And they were all geared toward one thing, as I said, taking down the president. Every single segment, and Jeff can probably attest to this too, it was always utilized to malign the president. It usually fell into one bucket, either calling him a racist, a xenophobe, anti-Semitic.
This is a white lash, all of that.
Exactly. Always fit into one bucket. And I was hard pressed, and I went back through several of my emails to find even one segment where we covered Hillary Clinton's emails. One. You never got that opportunity. You would change it to that, and the answer would be, we're not talking about Hillary. Back to Donald Trump.
All right, guys, I got to roll, but thank you, Jeff Lord. Kaylee, thank you. Appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. Wide open telephones when we come back. Straight ahead.
This 8-year-old boy from Burke County is determined to get his father the kidney transplant he needs.
The fourth grader even reached out to President Trump for help and was surprised when he got a response. That family shared their story with Eyewitness News reporter Dave Faraday today.
I'm so sorry to hear that your dad...
Four Putman read the letter out loud from President Trump. It's not every day someone gets mail from the White House, and certainly not from the president himself.
Like, wow, cool. I just got a letter from Trump.
That was the 8-year-old's reaction after getting the letter from President Trump. Back around Christmas, he wrote this letter, worried his father wasn't getting better because of a rare blood disorder that requires him to undergo dialysis 3 times a week.
Every night, you know, first thing he prays for is me getting a kidney. And, you know, that's why I want to get better, is for him.
My dad's been sick for 3 years, and he really needs a kidney so he can go out there and go outside and play with me and all that.
Sheila Sherrill is Ford's grandmother and believes the president will try to help.
I just know in my heart that it's going to be okay. God has reassured me that he's going to take care of Trey and Four.
I know there's thousands of people in my same situation, and you kind of feel helpless and like nobody cares. So it would be awesome if you really could help.
The family believes shirts they wear like this one also help get the word out. They're hoping tonight the words of a president will make a difference.
I've shared your letter with my staff, and they're working to see what they can help and provide.
If you had something to say to the president, what would you tell him?
Help me, and thanks.
Reporting in Burke County, I'm Dave Faraday, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
An amazing story about this incredible 8-year-old little boy. His name is Four Putnam, and his father's been going through dialysis now for 3 years. And he wrote the president wrote him back, and they now join us on our newsmaker line, as well as Trey's mother, Sheila Sherrill, and that would be Four's grandma. Thank you all for being with us. Four, how are you?
Good.
So I saw you holding up the picture of the letter from the president. What'd you think?
I thought it was pretty cool because, like most kids, they usually don't get a letter back from the White House.
I thought it was pretty cool too. You know, you're an incredible young man, and I've got to tell you, are you surprised now that you're on? You've become a big TV and radio star. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Do you like doing TV and radio?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want you to take it. Okay. But you can't take my job right away. I've got a couple of more years left of me, if that's okay with you.
And
I think you at least got to finish school, and that means going all the way through college, and then I'll retire, and you could take my place, okay?
Okay.
Sounds good.
I want to ask you obviously I know the story about your dad. I know our audience knows it, and you've watched your dad. It's a pretty tough thing to see your parents sick, and your dad has been going through dialysis, and you understand what dialysis is, and some people might not understand it. It's a pretty difficult process. He's on a kidney transplant list, and so you decide. Tell us the whole story about how you decided to write the president for your dad.
Me and my grandma were talking and going to write a letter to Santa, but then we're like, probably Santa won't give my dad a kidney because usually he just gives toys. So then we wrote a letter to, we're thinking about President Trump and Ivanka, and so we wrote a letter to them, and like, we're thinking we probably wouldn't get a note back because in the last 2 years, like, kids hadn't got letters back from presidents because, you know, they have a lot of stuff to do.
Yeah, they're kind of busy. It's a hard job, I agree. But you sent it anyway, right? And those were your words that you sent the president, right?
Right.
And every night I read that you say a prayer for your dad. Tell me about that.
Like you said, every night I say a prayer for my dad, and, like, I'll say, like, please help my dad get a kidney, like, two or three times during my prayer, because I really want him to get a kidney.
Yeah. And you play guitar with your dad, right? What kind of music do you like?
Country.
Yeah, me and
rock.
You both. Oh, you like rock, too? Would you have a favorite band or a favorite singer?
AC/DC.
AC/DC? All right, that's really funny. Now, you did say one thing in the note that caught my attention, and that is, well, maybe one toy. But what you really were asking for was the kidney for your dad, right? The kidney transplant.
Yeah.
You know, if you could pick one toy, what would that toy be? What would the one be that you wanted the most?
Morph board.
A what?
Morph board.
What's a morph board? What is that?
It's a board that it changes into a skateboard, a scooter, a balance ball, and like a bounce thing.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Everybody on my show, we decided before you came on that we're going to find out what your favorite thing is, and we're going to send that to you if that's okay with you. Because I don't know if the president knows what that is. I don't even know what it is, but Linda's going to figure out what it is because I'd never heard of that before. And we're going to send that to you, and because you're an unbelievable, amazing kid, and we just can't believe what a great kid you are, and it's so heartwarming. Let me ask you, Trey. I mean, first of all, I pray like your son does for you, and I hope you get your kidney transplant. I do know that there are people that have been contacted. One of the issues that I do know about kidney transplants, it depends what list you get on. If you're on a list in New York City, for example, the odds are a little higher because the population is so much more dense. Have people reached out to you in any way?
Yeah, actually, NYU, the doctor and his assistant reached out to us. I believe it was Dr. Montgomery and his assistant.
And what did they, so they're going to put you on the NYU list, or?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what all they're going to do. I'm supposed to go up there soon, and I think we'll go over more of what they're going to do then.
Yeah. How bad? I know you've been going.
People,
yeah, go ahead, sir.
There's been so many people reach out to me. It's really been amazing, you know. And it's all stemmed from this letter my 8-year-old wrote. And you know, I still can't believe it.
You had no idea he had written the letter.
Well, my mom had told me, but I just had no idea that you know it would reach who it's reached. I thought it had a better chance of Santa Claus writing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, what an amazing young man. You've got to be so proud of him. And what is the status with your kidneys now? I know people that have been on dialysis. It's a brutal life. I assume you go 3 days a week, 5 or 6 hours each time, right?
Yeah, and actually I've done peritoneal dialysis at home where I was on the machine for up to 12 hours every night. And I switched to hemodialysis, where I go to the dialysis center and have it 3 days a week for 5 hours a time.
Is it painful? I heard for some people it's very painful.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as painful as it is. Just it takes you out of your daily life, and you know you're sick a lot, and you have no energy, and right. You know that's where it's bothered for. You know, I used to coach his football team, and. You know, go to all his games, and it pretty much stopped me from doing all that.
Yeah. Well, everyone in this audience is praying for you. I want to say hi to your mom, Sheila, Cheryl, who's with us. Sheila, you got to be proud both of your son and this grandson of yours, four. And you were part of this, and I understand you're the one that got the letter, right?
Yes, I sure did, and I was very, very surprised, too, because – and that's what I told Four. I said, you know, presidents are really busy. And, you know, I really thought that it would be kind of like a canned letter, you know, with the, maybe a picture or something, which I thought was still exciting, you know, that they would even bother to respond. And he did. And I called him and I said, you have a letter here. And I said, it's from the White House. And it took them about 5 minutes to get to my house.
Right.
And they were really, really excited. And I was too. But, you know, Ford just tore open the envelope. And, you know, I was trying to get him to save it, you know, since it was from the White House. And but he was so excited, he just ripped the envelope open. And when his dad read the letter, I was just like, wow, wow.
Well, you know, there's so much to be proud of this young man. Four, let me ask you a couple of questions. So you like football, and what position do you play in football?
Quarterback.
You're a quarterback? Now, who's your favorite NFL quarterback?
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers. He's got a shotgun arm. He could throw far. Can you throw far, too?
Pretty far.
Yeah. And do you want to play in college football? What college would you want to play for?
Carolina.
Oh, Carolina. Is that where you're from?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really good choice, by the way. Well, I just wanted to say to you, the whole family here, it's been amazing to watch this whole story unfold. And for you're an amazing young little man at 8 years old, and we're very, very proud of you. And I want you to know that everybody in my audience, and you're probably being heard by about 15 million people right now, not that that matters, is sending prayers for you. And we wish you and your dad and your grandma all the best. And but Sheila, one last question about Wesleyan.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about
My other son lives in High Point, and they have two children that go to Wesleyan Academy. And they were telling me that each year the fourth graders write a letter to the White House.
Right.
And that this is the first year in 20 years a president has written back to them. And I'm like, wow, that is amazing. You know, that there's politicians and, you know, President Trump is a person. He's normal people, and he cares about normal people. It's not all about politics with him.
I could tell you from my own personal experience that is 1,000% true, and that the way the media portrays him is absolutely false. And they have no desire to have an open mind about it. But this is stuff, believe it or not, that he has done his whole life that nobody ever hears about. And they only want to print.
His agenda is the American people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and obviously things are getting done.
Yeah, he gets things done. And before, I mean, you know, they've always said, well, you know, red tape. Well, he's putting a stop to that, you know. He's actually getting in there and getting things done. And it doesn't take him 2 years or 5 years or whatever. He gets it done.
Well,
I mean, it's been amazing in a week. Our life has totally changed from gloom, you know, and how, you know, and God uses everybody. He uses, you know, just your normal people way up to powerful people. He put, you know, God's really working with Trump. People don't realize that. He's the most powerful man in the world. And for him to reach out to an 8-year-old, you know, his dad is sick, is amazing, amazing.
Well, I just want you to know, for you're a special young man. We're gonna send over that whatchamacallit thing that you
it's
want.
It's called a morph board.
A morph. What I don't still to this day don't know what a morph board is, but I'm gonna find out, and I'm gonna find the best one that they make, and I'm gonna send it over to your house, okay? And that's all right. And you could play with your dad. How's that?
Good.
Good. All right. And by the way, there is a GoFundMe account for Trey. And if there's anything we can do for you, Trey, at any point, please let us know. And you're in our thoughts and prayers. And Sheila, God bless you, too. And thank you all for being with us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you for helping
us. Thank you.
We're so grateful. Thank you.
All right. And for you.
God bless you.
Thank you, ma'am. And for you, just hang in there. You can take over for me when I'm done. OK.
OK.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
Wow, what an amazing family. What a, you know, that sounds like divine intervention. And, you know, 3 years on dialysis is rough. That's tough. What an incredible story. I know we report, all the fighting and all the crap all the time, and it's just nice to put out a good story once in a while. All right, so we're loaded up tonight. We have Devin Nunes' letter to Rod Rosenstein. We will be hitting tonight. The president on fire today as it relates to immigration. Also, the president now taking major steps so that people can have their own health savings accounts through their companies. And the president now is going to cut back on the omnibus bill. And on top of that, the president is putting troops on the border. He's doing it all himself. It's like action week at the White House. We'll have a full report on all of this tonight, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. As always, thanks for being with us. We'll see you tonight, back here tomorrow.